visiting some prior knowledge from me and some new information, I'm sure, for our listening audience. Today, I'm, again, pleased to have shared some time talking about the Job Corps education and training opportunities with the local outreach and transition specialist with the Job Corps, who is Jessica Sheeler. She works at the Kenosha County Job Center. And the information that she has shared has been very, very timely. It's very, very important. And I think, again, the most important thing is to remember that it is a crucial part of our youth's opportunity to be able to seek their pathway to success. And until next time, I thank you for listening, because education matters.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenny Aquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning, everyone. This is Jim McClure, your host this week. And I decided, with everything that is going on in the news in the law enforcement arena, from the, you know, some of the horrendous crimes that are going on to some of the controversial events that have happened in the past year, it seems like the past week, the past month. There's so much to talk about in the law enforcement arena, and certainly here in Walworth County and Racine County and Kenosha County, with summer, there are so many issues of public safety to be discussed too. And we have with us today, I think, one of the most eloquent people I've ever talked to in law enforcement, Chief Brad Buchholz of Sharon, Wisconsin. Chief, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me once again. Right? It's our second time out.
It's the second time around, and I enjoyed when you were on our show back in November, and I do want to say, on behalf of both the public and on the news media, I appreciate you making yourself available. It seems that so many departments, I wouldn't say are necessarily in a retreat mode, but not a lot of people are comfortable going in front of cameras and the microphone, and I appreciate you being open, and you always have good insights. It's been a tough summer in law enforcement. As you look back, and I think in the last month here, we've had the first anniversary of the Aurora, Colorado movieplex shooting.
Which, I don't know if you knew that, I have a little bit of a connection with that. My stepbrother was the Wisconsin resident in that theater that was shot that horrific day, and I'm glad to report that he's back up and running fine, but he was one of the victims of that shooting.
Was he injured at all?
Or? He was. He actually had severe damage in his leg, his femur, and some other areas of his legs. And it took a couple of years of rehab, but he is doing well, and still lives in Colorado, and works, I believe, for Coors Brewery, and doing well. But we were glad to see the justice had prevailed in that situation, and that he'll be behind bars.
I'm glad to hear he's doing well. And Chief, did he give you any insights that kind of matches up with your own knowledge of how the police responded to that particular situation? Was he aware of the police presence right away?
He was, but we really didn't talk in that aspect. At the time, we were just focusing on his health, and because he had sustained some serious injuries. So good question, but no, we never really talked about how law enforcement and even the prosecutorial process went.
You know, I don't, and where I'm heading with that is, I think it's almost public knowledge now, a common term. It is now, as you know, on the side, I work in corporate security, And we've become very attuned in that end of public safety to the term active shooter, the idea that someone may come into your business, your school. It's happened here in Wisconsin, your hair salon, your temple, your church. And one thing I realize as I get my training in the security end, which is, you know, to be the gatekeepers at the corporation or the business, is when the police respond, one, they mean business, and two, surprisingly, I don't think a lot of people realize when you get to the scene, whether it's you, you and a partner, you and a responding SWAT team, the first order of business isn't necessarily to get to the victims, but to stop their being further victims.
Correct. The active shooter scenario is something that here in the Village of Sharon, we practice regularly with our grade school. You know, I would never talk about my tactics. Unfortunately, that's something that we try to keep in-house. But we train for it, and you're right. We're not always trying to get everybody out. Sometimes it's to stop that threat. And I'm hoping that we never go through that kind of scenario. And the instances that I've seen here in, say, Wisconsin over the last couple of years, it looks like they're being performed accurately, correctly, and they're getting the job done, stopping that threat. So.
Here in Sharon, you're not too far from what was to be a huge Motorola corporate campus that's still waiting there. Has anyone ever suggested using that as a training area? It seems to me it would be perfect for both a mall or a campus situation.
No, that's a great point. What we try to do, though, is we train usually at the areas that we think they're going to be the largest threat. So the officers are familiar with those areas. So I have heard the Motorola plan. In fact, I think we tried to get some emergency vehicle operation. It's called EVOC for in law enforcement. Some training out there with the squad cars. But we had some difficulties, so we couldn't do that. But, no, we usually try to focus our training at areas that we think that are, you know, have susceptibility to high, you know, incidents or active shooter scenarios. So we're doing those at the grade schools, at apartment complexes here in town.
And something I didn't realize, at least that I've seen in the advisories that are given to employees at corporations and sometimes in schools. I'm not necessarily speaking for your area or your institutions here in southeastern Wisconsin and southwestern Walworth County and Sharon. But surprisingly, one of the tips for people that if you're confronted, in other words, if you, and I do want to cover your general advice if somebody finds themselves in this situation, whether they're in Kenosha, Lake Geneva, at a farm stand or at a county fair, try and avoid the person coming through. Don't confront them. Don't look them in the eye. But surprisingly, some of the advice I hear is, if you're cornered, go after them. Do whatever you got.
It's interesting. Good question. I think it is up to the individual and their comfort zone. You know, I wouldn't want to be held responsible for giving advice to somebody
right.
In that scenario, but you know, if you're going to go after that person, go after them with everything you have. If you may have some special training in that type of scenario, but you know, we got carry and concealed, and I don't know if that's something we get into or not here on this program, but you know, you have more instances where people are carrying weapons, and I think you're going to have in the future people, you know, going to have opportunities to take action with their weapon, and they feel comfortable in ending that threat. You're going to see more scenarios, I think, with that happening. So,
it's not a really a smart idea, is it, in this day and age, to go tiptoeing into houses looking for valuables, or checking in on the neighbor to see if they left the stereo or whatever. It occurs to me that if you're going to get shot, Wisconsin is probably going to be the place where a lot of people are hunters and now with concealed
I would suggest it. I mean, a lot of people, like I said, have weapons now. There's obviously a push for people to carry weapons. You know, we have a law that allows it now. So if they pass the background checks and do the proper paperwork, they're allowed to have weapons. And I don't think it's a good idea for anyone to be breaking into homes anymore.
Just to put you not on the spot, but also within the different philosophies, we are starting to see some heads of law enforcement, some county sheriffs, some police chiefs coming out and advocating, you know, we think more people should be armed. Others, on the other hand, tend to respond to some of these situations that we see by saying, you know, please, you don't need to add to it. Or if you do have a gun, for gosh sakes, make sure you have a gun lock on it for safety. What is your general thought when it comes to let the police do their job, and certainly we can cover tips that the individual citizen or employee can do to protect themselves? But
I see both points. Sheriff Clark obviously is an advocate for defending yourself. I think any chief is an advocate for that. It just comes to whether what side of the fence you want to promote more, letting law enforcement handle it, or like Sheriff Clark has publicly said many times that law enforcement may not get there in time, so you have the right to take it upon yourself to defend yourself. So I see both sides. If you're asking me personally, I've said before that if you're allowed to have a weapon, I think that you should be able to defend yourself with that weapon if you're allowed to have it. So I guess would be on the side of the fence of Sheriff Clark as well. If you're have the means to defend yourself, if you're at that point where you need to, so be it.
Sheriff Clark is the sheriff in Milwaukee County,
correct.
Yeah. And when I visit various police departments here in the Walworth County area, I see things like displays where you have gun locks that you give out and things like that. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that other side of the coin, that if you have that gun, there is a real responsibility to be safe with it, because it's going to be you, Brad, correct, making that call when the child picks it up and shoots his friend or whatever.
Yeah, we unfortunately had that situation occur. Can't talk too much about it because I still think it's in the court system, but there was an unfortunate tragedy that happened in Sharon Township about a year and a half ago now, where a boy shot another boy with a weapon. And so I am all for locking up guns. And here in the village of Sharon, we have free gun locks. We give those out regularly. In fact, I have a box of thousands of them, so we'll never run out. I did that my first week that I came here in 2011 as a chief of police, and I ordered those out, got them for free, and part of a safe lock initiative, and I promote it, and anybody that wants to ever have one, you don't have to be from the village of Sharon, just come down here and we'll give you one.
What's your tips for if you're minding your own business in public, if you're going to the theater, or you're at work? You never know. We hope and pray it doesn't happen. For some of us, it'll be a lifetime. For others, it'll be somebody we know. But it can happen literally anywhere. Is it kind of what the Air Force pilots talk about, the fighter jets, the Navy guys say too, of course, having that situational awareness, knowing what's around you. How do you protect yourself in a crazy world where anything could happen anywhere?
I always say cops have that sixth sense. They have that hair that comes up in the back of their neck. If they see something, feel something's wrong, they usually take action. To the general public, you're right. Be aware of your surroundings. I was told that when I was in the Navy and in the service, and in today I would say the same thing. You be aware of what's around you, and if something looks suspicious, by all means, get that cell phone out. We all have them now. Dial 911, say something doesn't seem right, and let law enforcement know, and then we can confront the situation.
Yeah, I sometimes worry that I'm a big advocate of calling 911 and obviously when it doesn't seem to be in an emergency, calling the non-emergency number and saying this doesn't seem quite right. But
I understand that not everybody knows the local police department's phone number. So,
right.
You know, if you think it's an emergency in your heart, you know, dial 911 and they'll get you to the right number if it's not an emergency situation.
With some of the national things that we've seen, I know you can't give away a lot of techniques, but just to give people a little bit of an insight, when an incident happens that's definitely a more than one policeman, policewoman, more than one department thing, there's a whole network we're not aware of, isn't there, that all of a sudden people can swarm in if need be, or people can cooperate for how is this all interconnected when you get that, you know, that airliner that goes down in a cornfield that was supposed to make it to Minneapolis but somehow ended up just outside Sharon, and all of a sudden you've got what could easily use 20, 30 police, you know, 40 ambulances and multiple hospitals. How are police able to respond to, you know, even the big things that happen?
That's a good question. There is a network in southeast Wisconsin. There's many networks throughout the state, but here in southeast Wisconsin, we have a program called SMART, which is Suburban Mutual Aid Response Team. We are part of it. The Village of Sharon is part of it. I believe every department in Walworth County is part of it, or at least the majority of it. And basically what that is, if there is a large catastrophic situation or something that like an active shooter, like at the salon in Brookfield or other parts, the incident is happens. The SMART program goes into effect, and dispatch centers will then dispatch local law enforcement agencies to the scene based on what they can provide. And all the departments have submitted paperwork that says what our resources are. And so depending on the situation, they will pull a certain card or response scenario. And then we will, if we're a little bit lower on that totem pole because of our resources that we can give, but we'll certainly respond to it and help out as needed.
You have a unique position in Sharon, don't you, in that if you are going to end up cooperating with another municipality, another township, another state, another county, I mean, can you explain your geography here, where you are? Just outside the western edge of Geneva Lake, but, boy, you're right next to another state, several counties.
Yeah, again, we're part of SMART, so we're going to be pretty much assisting everyone in the southeast Wisconsin area, Milwaukee County, Waukesha County, Walworth. But it wouldn't be out of the realm that if Boone County, which is on the other side of my jurisdiction, or McHenry County, which is on the southeastern part
in Illinois,
Illinois, asks for our assistance, we certainly would do whatever we can to help. And again, remember, on the west side of my village limits is Rock County, so we certainly could and have helped Rock County on different scenarios as well. So.
Have you ever had a situation where somebody was being pursued from Illinois into Wisconsin, or you had to pursue somebody from Wisconsin into Illinois?
Well, we you start going over the state line, it would have to be a felony that we would imminent danger to the public. So we probably don't do a lot of traffic chases into the state. Since I've been here, no, we haven't had any, I believe, that have come up from Illinois. So.
Yeah.
We'd have to do base how we follow a car or chase a car based on our policy that we have.
What's the general policy these days that most departments are? I know it comes and goes of pursuit
each
versus non-pursuit.
Different.
Yeah.
Each department's different. So, but a lot of chases, I know that's a big deal going on right now. in Milwaukee County. So, I can't talk for other departments or other counties because that's a hot spot. It's a hot topic. You know, do you chase or not chase?
Pro and con. I'd have to think, Chief, that it's not a real high. It's not a good high value bet that it's going to end well if you try and get away from, especially the new Dodge Chargers and souped up Ford Explorers you guys have now.
Yeah, well, yeah, we have some high performance vehicles, but you know, at the same time, everything that we do, we have to think of the safety of others that are not involved in this chase. Or during a car chase, and their safety is paramount to us. So our officers go to training, several times a year to learn how to operate those vehicles in a safe and responsible manner. I don't want to get too much into our policy right now on if we're going to chase or not chase, but I'm confident that our officers are able to perform the duties if they have to that situation where they have to chase somebody.
Let's talk about the individual situation that you see as a working daily officer, and that is the traffic stop. And with all that we've seen in the news, pro, con, the situation with the woman from Naperville, Illinois, in Texas, who ended up in a traffic stop that did not go well, and then went to jail, ended up committing suicide. And there's many debates about how everything happened with that that interaction. And with over the 15 or 20 years now that we've had car cameras, there's been a lot of critiques back and forth over when an officer acts too aggressively or not aggressively enough. What is the, I almost want to say like hygiene, you know, the basic things you do to brush your teeth, to comb your hair, to fold your clothes. What is the best hygiene to practice as a police officer in terms of the steps or the system you take when you pull over that car for whatever reason, not knowing whether you've got Timothy McVeigh or a group of lost nuns? I don't see how you guys even get out of the car anymore, frankly.
Well, I have to say thank God that we still have heroes, and that's what I call them, heroes, that still want to do this job. It's not an easy job. You're constantly scrutinized on whether you're taking the right action or not the right action, or you're being, you know, overly aggressive or not overly aggressive. My mantra is basically, and I say this when we train the officers, is that your safety is paramount, okay? The officer's safety is paramount. You want to go home at night. So you need to take the steps that you think will keep you safe during that traffic stop and also the people in that car, all right? You need to take steps to make sure everyone's safe. But you fall back on the training that you offer the officers when they first come on board, and hopefully that's enough to give them the awareness of the actions that they're supposed to take during that stop and that interaction with the public.
What would happen in a city or a town or a county where you didn't make all that many traffic stops for whatever reason? To you didn't have the manpower, or you decided you didn't want to be that aggressive in seeking out problems on the road. Isn't it kind of job one, though, when it comes to keeping your fingers on the pulse of what's going on in the community and also what's safe out there on the road? If you didn't have traffic stops, if you didn't pull somebody over for a missing taillight or a license plate, pretty soon you've lost control of the community, I imagine.
You're right, and our officers in this department do. And it's not a secret. We do pull over for that taillight and that bad bulb that's going over the license, because not only is it mandatory by state statute, but, you know, other things come out of that. And we're aggressive in that type of enforcement of traffic violations. So other communities might not do that, but we do. So we the question was, you know, you got to stay in the pulse of the community. Well, we do a lot of traffic stops here for a small town. We're critiqued sometimes about that, but I stand behind the officers that they're doing the right thing when they do make these equipment violations and not using your blinker and those type of what some would say, you know, low grade traffic violations. But I promote it, and big things come out of it. So our officers are, I like to think, in tune with the community. They get a lot of information sometimes out of these traffic stops, not to mention other violations, bigger violations.
Do you have any Wisconsin versions of, you know, the example I talk of when I speak about Timothy McVeigh, who did the Oklahoma City bombings? I mean, he pretty much got away, was getting to a different state, and a trooper stopped him because I think a taillight,
yeah,
a taillight was out, and here he ends up stopping the person that committed that horrible crime. What has come, you know, in recent years out of some simple stops where some real good came out of, you know, is it just day-to-day stuff, or?
Yeah, it seems like it. I can't think of any right now off the top of my head. It's a great question. I can't think of any that have come where an officer stopped something for just a taillight and something huge came out of it. Later on in the interview, it'll pop to me, and I'll blur it out, and I'll say, hey.
Please do. But the more standard, you know, I realize you didn't run into Osama bin Laden 4 years ago on his way to Bratfest in Sharon. But you find people on warrants, and you find people who have committed crimes. You know, who knows? I imagine missing children sometimes are located through the most routine stops, too.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we get alerts all the time, whether it come from the Fusion Center out of Milwaukee or our Wisconsin alert system. So I copy four of those to the officers, and we have a list, and the officers are always vigilant. They'll have more knowledge than, you know, the regular citizen thinks. Of what they're looking for. Remember, we have computers in these squad cars, so there's messages always going back and forth of attempt to locate for certain people. And in a given day, I'll have about 15 facts come through and just say, you know, this person's wanted, or be aware of credit card fraud. So there's a huge network, like I said, whether through the Fusion Center, Wisconsin Intelligent Bulletin, the Wisconsin Alert system, they all come through. And so we have a host of knowledge out there, sometimes too much. Hard to sort through it all. But.
The art of the traffic stop, when do you know that it's time to call for backup? Because it seems to me, from my lay perspective, you know, whether the officer is ultimately at fault, or the person stopped is resisting arrest, or is engaged in threatening activity, it seems to me that no matter what the situation is, if you do the right technique, a lot of times you can avoid things from getting worse or getting out of hand. How do you keep in step with, you know, the four or five different steps of what can happen in the course of a stop?
You know, these smaller communities around this area, you know, sometimes it's only one police officer on duty. So they'll ask for backup, and we get, like in this scenario here in Sharon, we have cooperation from many of the different jurisdictions around that. They'll back us up. The county comes through, Village of Walworth, Fontana, and vice versa. We're backing them up a lot of times as well. So it's up to the officer when he thinks he needs backup, but I promote that. I wish I'd have backup on every, you know, traffic stop. You know, the general public goes by and they say, "Oh, geez, why is there two or three police officers there? That's ridiculous. That's over, you know, doing it." But you know, I believe that, you know, you have two, three officers there, you can feel confident that you got your back covered, and you can get the traffic stop done, get it done fast, and then be on your way. Or if there's more action to be taken, then so be it, if the person has to be taken into custody. And I promote having backup. And, you know, we got body cams now. We got squad cameras now. So sometimes that's the only backup you have. In the sense that you don't have an extra physical body, but you have an eye in the sky, let's say. And as we've talked about before, I think last visit that we had, you know, our officers have body cams. We've had them now for, I think, almost 3 years, and they're required to use it in almost every contact they have with the citizens. And then any traffic stop, the squad camera goes on as well.
How has that worked out? Does it end up being like the high school football coach the following Sunday, or are you checking everything from the week before, or is it just as it becomes necessary that you go back and look at individual things, for example, if it's needed in court for testimony or whatever?
Yeah, those body camera digital copies that we use them in court. The district attorney, I believe, likes them, it promotes it. We use it for training, so a lot of times I'll look and review some of these interactions with the public or traffic stops, and if there's extra training to come out of it, you know, we'll do that based on what I observe on the cameras. It helps in any kind of general public like citizen complaints that come in that they ask to see. We'll review it sometimes with them, mm-hmm. And like I said, if there's extra instruction to be taken that the officer learns from that interaction and through the tape process, and we'll do that as well.
In the several steps between, oh, I don't know, the stereotypical, sir, do you know why you pulled you over, to, all right, get out of the car now, up against the hood. Very important that the officer retain control of the situation.
Always.
How much can you take? How many four-letter, eight-letter words? How many people throwing their cigarettes at you? How many people in the back saying, man, get the heck out of here, or I'm going to, you know, while the driver's saying, shut up. I mean.
Well, law enforcement goes through, you know, we go through the academy, and we're taught in the academy that, you know, we're supposed to be able to take some of that. Have to have sort of a hard shell, because nobody likes having interaction with police officers. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I mean, negative contact. So we're expecting that someone's going to say something to us, you know, you're this, you're that. Well, okay, well, those are just words. When there's physical altercation, that's something different. And then an officer goes hands-on. But if someone's did a four-letter word to me, okay, that's your perception. You know, I'm not going to handcuff you unless you're disturbing the public. And if that's where the line is crossed.
Law enforcement Professor Buchholz's five-step plan, if you are a driver and you are pulled over, resisting arrest is what you don't want to. I mean, at that point, the stakes really start rising.
Correct.
Don't touch me. Where do I, as a citizen, cross the line to the point that you have to step it up and say, hey, you're fighting me now. You're getting in deeper.
Yeah, right. If an officer decides that you have broken some kind of ordinance or a state statute, it's a felony or something like that, and we've made the conscious decision that you're going to be handcuffed, you know, I'm going to advise you. You're under arrest. Put your hands behind your back, sir, ma'am. And we're going to put hands on, we're going to put the handcuffs on you. If you break away or flex up and you're trying to resist me, well then, you know, I may have to escalate it to the next situation. You know, we have different tools at our disposal to use for compliance. We carry tasers, mace, batons. You know, no officer wants to have that escalated, but sometimes we have to take control. We have to be one step above what the other person is using. And we're trying to gain compliance in the least forceful way, if that makes sense to you.
Sure. Before the traffic stop, before the call out, you know, please come over and check, there's a suspicious person, or I'm having, the middle of a domestic situation. What are the types of things you do in the community to not only build goodwill, but to also say, we're here, we care, and by all means, let us know what's going on so we can help you, because that's why we do what we do in law enforcement.
Help me out with that question, because for instance, you said, if we went to a domestic, help me out a little bit.
You know, you mentioned in the past that, for instance, you have a program where you bring turkeys out.
Ah, yes.
And sometimes it may have been a place where the last interaction wasn't all that great, but how do you handle that? But two, what so seeds does it community. Sow?
Bridging the community gap sometimes between law enforcement. Now I understand what you mean. Then you're right. We do a lot of things that we try to bring the community closer to the police department. And we know that we're here to serve them. And we're public figures and public servants. But we're there to also maintain order. But, you know, public relations is part of the job. And I feel that we've done a good job here since I've been here to start a bunch of community programs. I think we've talked about this before, but we have sports card initiatives where we hand out Packer or Brewer cards, and we did it again this winter.
Yeah, no, I don't think we've got into that before. You get into games or
no? What the officers have? We've teamed up with Milwaukee Brewers, Green Bay Packers, depending on the season, and they give us cards. Of the player cards, and there's a positive message on the back. And officers, when they see children in the community, they'll stop and interact with them, and they'll give them a card. The program, how we have set up, is that they collect a different card every week. And at the end of the season, we have a huge party, and they bring their cards to us to show that they have, you know, collected them all. And then they sign up, and we have prizes that we give out. We have like this last season for the Packers, we gave a 40-inch TV, flat-screen TV out, give Xboxes out, sandwiches, movie passes, bowling passes, stuff like that. We've done that for the last 3 or 4 years, and that's been very successful. We'll have hundreds of kids come in here and be part of that.
You think it pays off down the line that kid 10 years from now?
I hope so.
You know.
And that's what we're trying to achieve. We're trying to have positive interaction with that kid early on in his formative years. To say, you know, something. You know what? The police aren't that bad. They're actually there to help me, and I can just get up there and talk to them. And this past spring, we had the bike rodeo, which I thought was really successful. We gave out about 33 helmets for free that were donated from Walmart in Delvin, and we checked their bikes, make sure they were safe. We did a bike ride around town, went over some different safety factors, different hand signals you're supposed to do, and proper ways of braking on bikes. And that was very successful. And
you would reward them if they had helmets? Is that how it worked?
Well, yes. Now the combination of that program is that now that when we ride around town, if we see them with their helmets, any kid with a helmet, we stop and then we give them a free coupon to get a free ice cream cone at the local ice cream shop here in town. So we've seen an increase of kids wearing their helmets, which is what we're really trying to achieve.
One trend that I notice while driving the county highways out here is I see people wearing their helmet, but at night, I mean, I thought at least in the old days when I was taught back in the 70s and 80s, at night they don't have the red light in back, and they don't have they're driving in the dark wearing. Are there any regulations in Wisconsin?
There
on that?
Are, but you know, I don't see an. You know, there's so much technology out there for bicyclists and cyclists to buy these blinking lights, and you can see that guy a mile away now. It's almost like halogen or LED police lights. You know, there are rules, and when I see people that don't go out and get that $5 little blinking light that would really help someone to see it, I don't understand it. So I would promote that they get the proper equipment.
Summer is a time for safety. I think in driving, a lot of people are enjoying one friend of ours in the Tourism Bureau calls a refreshing beverage. How attuned are you to the need for people to really watch that drinking, and how much of a safety is it both you know, the heading home after quote a few beers and the speed. I mean, the two were a bad combination.
It is, and our department, along with I believe every department in Walworth County, is part of a safe initiative, an OWI seatbelt task force, and we have been fortunate enough to receive grant money from the Bureau of Transportation and Department of Transportation, and those monies then are given to the department to put extra law enforcement personnel out on the road to enforce these different things, like I said, OWI and seatbelt and speeding initiatives. So there's sometimes like two or three a month that we have, and I know the Sheriff's Department has been instrumental in getting the program up and running, and we've I know put a lot of press out on it, and we coincide that those dates with important date events that are going on in the county, like Alpine Valley or Country Thunder or the 4th of July. So I think we have one coming up here, two of them, I think, in the next week or two. And our department's part of it.
Yeah, it's a lot more it's a lot more obvious, and it's a lot more transparent. It I was impressed by, from the Walworth County Sheriff's Department, I think it was the captain in charge of the traffic division, said at the end of the press release, if you were stopped for this, you will get a ticket. I think in that case it was for seatbelt. But I've never seen it stated that directly. But, you know, I think people do have to kind of observe, if you'll forgive me doing the radio equivalent of flashing my headlights, that Officer Brad is just down the street, and I've just passed him. But if you drive through Sharon and you see the Sharon police out, and you drive through Walworth County, and then you see Lake Geneva, and then you see Town of Lynn, and then you see the Salem, the chances are the Grants are out that weekend, and you better observe that speed limit sign.
Yeah, you know, this sounds blunt, but we mean business. If you get stopped, and at least in my jurisdiction, and those things are occurring, you've had too much to drink, not having your seatbelt on, you're going to get a ticket. So I'm not hiding behind any mask on that. You're going to get a ticket. And we've, I think, promoted and said to the media, or by means of the media, enough to let people know that we're out there and we're going to stop you, and if it warrants, and you're going to get a ticket.
The cynical person often says, oh, they got to make their quota. It's end of the month. This is how they make a lot of money. Is it that, or is it saving lives and
making sure? It's saving lives. You know, our department has no quota. If anybody comes to my front desk and says, you're just trying to make a quota, there is no quota. The board doesn't make that happen. We're not a speed trap town, and we're not trying to generate money. We're interested in making the community safe, the roads in our community safer for not only the Sharon residents, but whoever's visiting our town. So if you don't like the citation, we're not asking you to like it, but if you don't believe that you should have received that, then you just go to the court date. And I know it's inconvenience, but that's how the system works. You have your day in court. You talk to the judge about why maybe you think you shouldn't have received that, and you go from there. But as a driver or a passenger in that car, certainly you shouldn't be escalating it so it goes the next step. And so that would be my points. Just be courteous, provide the information that the officer is asking for, and then be on your way.
A final point for summer safety. Especially after midnight when most people have been served or over-served, is it also wiser, and we have the connections here, is it sometimes better to take the extra 5 minutes and get on Interstate 43 or Interstate 94 or Highway 50 than to go down that county shortcut or that two-lane road? Is it safer sometimes to take the busier divided highway to get home?
That's a good question, but I don't know if the data would provide that it's safer on a faster highway versus slower speed roadway. I don't know how to answer that one. Good question, but I don't know how to answer it. Drunk drivers are everywhere. They're going to be on a highway. They're going to be on, you know, a slower, you know, back road. If you're asking how to be safer, you're talking about as a
driver,
but the driver that's not drinking, right?
Right.
Okay. I don't know which one's safer. you know, unfortunately, we have OWIs everywhere. So,
all right. Chief Brad Buchholz, I appreciate it. We didn't get into the deer that took out the front half of my car since we last spoke.
I see that fish. You're